Americas, live and underway at the Qatari capital of Doha. For what is episode 202 of this fine program on what is semifinal eve, Hercules Gomez, of the 2022 World Cup. The semifinals, by the way, bring us a new ball. We are switching from Al Rila to Al Ilm. Your thoughts?
Journey to the dream.
Makes sense, right? You dream of the semifinals.
I guess so.
No?
What is it? All right.
Puro marketing.
Speech shell,
as they
it says
say,
on here.
Right?
El marketing a full effect. All right.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Adidas going to sell a few more balls. Which one do you prefer?
¿Estás alboreando?
Yo, which one do you like? No. Primero no. For those who don't speak Spanish, we won't fill you in on what was said. No,
just go on with the rest of the show.
You don't have a preference. I like the first one.
Do
I don't
you?
Know why we're switching.
Right.
Yeah. So we got a lot to get to on the show. What are you wearing? Because it's something cool.
Show yes. The people. Our good friends at look, this is Puma sent me the CP10 edition. They got some fly gear. Sent me some headphones as well.
Wow. Okay.
Always appreciative.
Whoa.
Sent me a voucher for was it $30,000? No, they didn't do that. I'd be more than happy to take it.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, the gear is pretty fly. So sporting that today. What are you wearing?
We would put that to the Football America's budget. Actually, to my clothing budget. The District FC, always representing my hometown of Washington. Lots to get to right. on tonight's show. We are going to be previewing the first of the two semifinals here at the World Cup. Argentina against Croatia. Our good friend Morena Beltran will be back. We'll break out the tactics board. Have a look at that. We've got a promise of more exportation hurt from Liga MX president Mikel Arriola. We'll see if we get to that because we do have a jam-packed show. We are also going to conduct a thought exercise, right? Who might be the next U.S. men's national team manager
so much.
If Greg Berhalter does not return. But, Herc, we have to start today with the story which simply will not die. What has happened with Gio Reyna at this World Cup? We're starting to get some of the details. Greg Berhalter, speaking at a leadership conference in New York on Tuesday, was asked about handling difficult decisions around performance. Here's what he had to say, quote, "An example I can give you, in the last World Cup, we had a player that was clearly not meeting expectations on and off the field. One of 26 players, so it stood out. As a staff, we sat together for hours deliberating what we were going to do with this player. We were ready to book a plane ticket home. That's how extreme it was. And what it came down to was, we're going to have one more conversation with him, and part of the conversation was how we're going to behave from here on out. There aren't going to be any more infractions." Berhalter continued. "But the other thing we said to him was, you're going to have to apologize to the group, but it's going to have to say why you're apologizing. It's going to have to go deeper than, quote, guys, I'm sorry. And I prepped the leadership group with this. I said, okay, this guy's going to apologize to you as a group, to the whole team. And what was fantastic in the whole thing is that after they apologized, they stood up one by one and said, listen, it hasn't been good enough. You haven't been meeting our expectations of a teammate, and we want to see change. They really took ownership of the process, and from that day on, there were no issues with this player. Worth noting, anything shared in this conference was supposed to be off the record. We've confirmed with someone who was there that attendees were specifically told this and asked not to record any of the speakers. It's also worth noting, these words appeared in the event's actual own publication. After this was released, our Jeff Carlisle reached out to Greg Berhalter, who responded via text, quote, "It's not really important who it was. The important thing is that the group had very clear standards, and they were prepared to communicate if the standards weren't being met. Sometimes that communication leads to positive change and a clear path forward." So at that point, it may not be exactly clear who the player was. Tom Bogert of MLSsoccer.com, the first to confirm on Twitter that the player was indeed Gio Reyna. From there, an article from The Athletic by Sam Stajkal and Paul Tenorio filled in some more details, including that Reyna showed a, quote, "alarming lack of effort in training ahead of the U.S. opening match against Wales, so much so it was unclear if he was protecting against an injury. Several veterans reportedly pulled him aside, including DeAndre Yedlin and Aaron Long. The sources cited, and it's also worth noting the sources requested anonymity, those sources adding that the situation became, quote, untenable and was addressed multiple times before Reyna finally apologized to the team." Okay, so we've got a few sides of the story. And then just about an hour and a half ago, we've got Gio Reyna's side of the story. He took to his Instagram account. I hope not to comment on matters at the World Cup. It is my belief that things that happen in a team setting ought to remain private. That being said, statements have been made that reflect on my professionalism and character, so I feel the need to make a brief statement. Just before the World Cup, Coach Berhalter told me that my role at the tournament would be very limited. I was devastated. I am someone who plays with pride and passion. Soccer is my life, and I believe in my abilities. I fully expected and desperately wanted to contribute to the play of a talented group as we tried to make a statement at the World Cup. I am also a very emotional person, and I fully acknowledge that I let my emotions get the best of me and affect my training and behavior for a few days after learning about my limited role. I apologize to my teammates and coach for this, and I was told I was forgiven. Thereafter, I shook off my disappointment and gave everything I had on and off the field. Reyna continued, I am disappointed that there is continuing coverage of this matter, as well as some highly fictionalized versions of events, and extremely surprised that anyone on the U.S. men's team staff would contribute to it. Coach Berhalter has always said that issues that arise with the team will stay, quote, in-house, so we can focus on team unity and progress. I love my team, I love representing my country, and I am focusing now only on improving and growing as a soccer player and a person. I hope that going forward, each person involved in U.S. soccer focuses only on what is in the best interest of the men's national team so we can enjoy great success at the World Cup in 2026.
Whew. Take a breath.
A lot to unpack there. Let's start with Gio Reyna's reported behavior, Herc. What do you make of it?
Okay. Let's focus only on Gio Reyna here.
Okay.
Gio Reyna's behavior. It's unfortunate. I'm disappointed. I'm sure Gio Reyna can give a rip if I'm disappointed or not. Out of character or not, it's not what you want to see of a player in any team setting. It's a team first. He broke that code. Don't care how old you are, you can't act like a petulant child.
So no pass for his age.
No pass for his age in his actions. The team is the most sacred of things in competition. Mandan ellos, they run things. As a whole, nobody should be above it. Gio's actions should and did rub a lot of those players the wrong way.
How would you have felt if you were in that locker room?
Same way as many of those players, upset with them. Now, where age comes into play, Gio Reyna was forgiven for it. I am glad that the group as a whole is mature enough to get there and that Gio Reyna is mature enough to seek forgiveness and to get there. Gio Reyna is 20 years old. I'm not the same person. You're not the same person as when we were 20 years old. We've hopefully have gotten better and learned from our experiences. It just so happens that Gio Reyna and these experiences are put on blast for the world to see.
They're on literally the biggest stage possible.
I don't fault Gio Reyna for his reaction. It is natural. I fault him for his actions.
Okay.
For his train of thought, I don't fault.
For
he
being
will learn
let
from
down.
This.
Right.
The disappointment for being let down.
So where does it cross the line? Because he lets it affect the trainings?
Because it lets affect his attitude, which affect his actions. You can't for 1 second give any less of yourself to the team. And he let that consume him. And it was so evident that not only did the coach bring this up to him, but several players. And if you think that, per reports, Aaron Long and Yedlin were the only ones to bring this to his attention, no, you're wrong.
There's more. Okay.
And if you think other players weren't upset with him, you are wrong.
So why not send him home?
It almost got to that point.
No, I see that. Would you have sent him home if you were the coach?
And per many reports, there was a vote. Now, it wasn't a player's vote.
Right.
I can tell you that.
You're saying all the players did not vote.
I'm saying all the players did not vote. I'm not certain if it was only a coaching vote or a leadership council vote, but all the players did not vote. Take that out of your vocabulary right now. Okay. Take that out of your train of thought. That's not the case. Gio deserves better than that.
It was not a survivor situation.
It's not a survivor situation, and this is the most unfortunate thing. This being out there now puts Gio's character in question. You start asking yourself if these actions, these moments were there before. When they celebrated the group phase victory of getting out of that group phase, and we saw the video of him moping around, not celebrating, going back to his actions and his demeanor at Dortmund, were there signs there? We are now putting Giovanni Reyna's character into question, and that is unfortunate. Gio deserves a lot more than that. This brief experience at a World Cup, where you are told by a coach you are going to have a limited role, and how devastating that must be. You never ever take away the hope, the dream from a player.
Really?
I don't care how true it may be. You don't take that away. You don't say, here's the carrot. It's no longer there out in front of you. You pulled the rug from beneath his feet, and that is a natural reaction, but it is not a natural action.
Okay.
Okay? The emotion is natural. His then saying, you know what? F this, I'm out. Emotionally, physically, that is not correct. So I am focusing on Gio right now.
Yeah.
Gio's going to get better from this, but the pure taking the dream away from a player, a 20-year-old kid with such a high ceiling, who's gone through so much in the last 14 months, who has been such a big part of your program leading up to this World Cup qualifying campaign, and you take that away from him? Man.
Is there a case to be made for transparency? The reason I ask is because we have criticized Greg Berhalter in the past for a lack of transparency. I'm thinking specifically a case like John Brooks, who you talked about all the time. Is that not something here? Because I'm wondering, like, to your point, why would you tell that to a player? Surely the manager thought that that was a good thing to communicate to the player,
then
right?
You're a bad manager because you need to know who your players are.
Okay.
The best thing about a manager, good coaches, good managers, know what they have at their disposal and how they can get the most out of those players in said pool. So if this is your pool, how can I maximize each and every one of these players to get the best for the collective?
And being honest here with the player was not the thing to do?
If he thought being honest with a player and saying, you're going to have a limited role in the World Cup, and it's a big player like Gio Reyna, was the best strategy to get the best out of him, then it's beyond your depth. What have I always told you about Greg Berhalter?
That he talks himself into trouble, among many things that you've repeated about him, yes.
Talks too much. If Greg Berhalter thought telling Gio Reyna that he would have a limited role would light a fire on him, underneath him, in the right way, an adolescent, a 20-year-old.
Right. What if it's the opposite?
Then he's way out of touch with this generation.
What if it was damage control? What if he thought by not telling Gio that what we saw for a few days,
you're the coach,
before he addressed it with
the
team,
coach,
would have dragged for the whole group phase.
You know what the player
would have dragged into the round of 16.
You know what the player has to do if you don't play him? Do you know what he has to do if you don't play him?
What?
Train harder. Work harder. Show him that you want to be in there. That's what you have to do. But the moment you pull the rug from beneath him, I'm disappointed in the reaction, but I am not surprised by said reaction. He's not the first player with talent that's gone down this road, and he certainly won't be the last. But as a coach, you can never take that possibility, that dream away. Now, do I think Greg Berhalter, do I really feel that he handled it well? In terms of what went down?
Yeah, let's not get to the part of airing the dirty laundry, but handling this.
No,
was this the right way to do it?
Handling this. Let me go back, okay? Mm-hmm. There was a moment after the Wales game where he was asked about Giovanni Reyna.
Yes.
And he said, well, it's a fitness issue, alluding to his hamstring, right?
Yes.
And then he backtracks that. And then he said it's tactical. I do feel Greg Berhalter was trying to protect Giovanni Reyna.
Right.
There, specifically. And in that moment, and we spoke about it, when we said the truth lies somewhere in between, I do feel he was trying to protect him. If he airs that laundry out, it's going to be, you're talking about it for the whole tournament, you've lost
if
Giovanni Reyna.
If you send him home, are you thinking like it was the right thing not to send him home? You believe that?
Yeah, I think it was the right thing not to send him home. Now, We don't know how bad it got between him and his teammates. But
right. Untenable is the reporting from The Athletic. That's wow. And I want to just point out, that's not one person who wrote that. That's two reporters that combined for that story who, if you don't know who those guys are, I can't believe you're watching this show. Paul Tenori, Sam Stajkal, they've been all over this national team for a long time.
And listen, you were...
They know, if they're reporting it, it's well-sourced.
You work
well
in this
sourced.
Business long enough where we are, and information just kind of comes to you.
Yes. Well, especially you, having played and agents and all that stuff.
And if you think we weren't aware of something in the middle of this tournament, then you don't know who you're kind of watching here. But it's not just us. I've spoken to colleagues in other networks, mm-hmm. and everybody would get, hey, I've been hearing rumblings about this.
Yeah.
I've been hearing that. And you let it grow. As long as you can protect the environment, it is fine. If they thought it was so untenable, as you just mentioned, that it was a realistic possibility where the only way things would get better was with Giovanni Reyna's exclusion, imagine how bad that was. But if that's the way...
That sounds pretty toxic.
If that's the way you can protect the core, you can protect the collective,
right.
then that's what you need to do. I am glad it didn't get that far. Now, I am very surprised with individuals within that group who I think we all respect, like Tyler Adams, like Tim Ream, like Walker Zimmerman, that it would get to that place. I am very surprised.
You can't fault those guys for Gio Reyna's behavior.
I'm not faulting those guys.
I mean, and it seems like once it was brought to the team, it was dealt with pretty quickly.
I'm not faulting those guys. Yeah. I'm just very surprised it came to those lengths where he was almost let go. Now, Giovanni Reyna is going to have his own cross to bear here. Mm-hmm. But there's another side to this. It's the fallout.
Right. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second. I want to point out a couple things as far as kind of Berhalter's initial what seems like mishandling of this, that press conference after Wales where he says both the tactical explanation why he went with Jordan Morris, right, and then also the story of Gio Reyna's tightness, right? So, one, I think we see in the Athletic article that the performance specifically in the scrimmage against Algarafa was so kind of overwhelmingly out of character that it forced the coaching staff to question whether the player was guarding against an injury.
Right.
Beyond that, there's a quote published from the Mix Zone after the Wales game from Henry Bushnell, who writes for Yahoo Sports, where Reyna himself uses the word tightness. So this idea that Berhalter lied, those are Reyna's words, tightness. Those are Reyna's words. So he may have been trying to cover...
Well, Berhalter did lie, but I think it was an attempt
where?
To protect the player.
Well, not if Reyna's saying it was tightness.
But then he said it was tactical.
Could it be both?
No, it's one or the other. I mean,
if the
player is not fit, then it's not tactical. It's physical. Do you understand?
I guess so. I think then we're leaving out that
it's availability.
Berhalter may have valued Morris more in that role, right?
Which is fine. You could say that if you want. You're the coach. Then we will question you tactically. But there is an inconsistency with Greg Berhalter. Now, I understand why. I feel he's trying to protect the player.
Right, right.
Giovanni's 20 years old, and he's already made these mistakes in-house to his teammates. The last thing you want to do is put him on blast for the world to see in the biggest sporting event of this collective's life.
Right, right. Okay, so let's get to kind of the brass tacks here, right? Gio Reyna's upset. Because he found out he's not going to have a big role. Obviously, hindsight's 20/20. Obviously, we're looking back at this tournament now and the performances of everybody else. Would you have started him against Wales?
If he showed you that attitude?
Well, he didn't show you that. So the attitude comes after he's told he's not going to play a big role,
when
right?
When was that? It was because in this scrimmage, the attitude was so bad, it questioned. Because this is what we're hearing. In this scrimmage, before the World Cup, the
right,
attitude
but
was so
but why
bad,
is the attitude
so bad?
Because he was told he was not going to have a significant
Correct.
Role.
Correct.
So we have to say that before he...
So he gets a pass from the group for that?
No, I'm just saying let's get to the point where he's in training camp, things are going normally, right?
Right.
We have not seen the bad days.
Okay.
Okay?
Because we don't know the exact timeline.
Right. At that point, should Gio Reyna have been a starter for this team?
Who does he start for?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, in hindsight, the only player that you could take off or the place that makes sense is Tim Weah,
who was your best player against Wales, one of your best players in the tournament. And I know it's hindsight.
You're not taking him in for, you're not putting him in for Pulisic.
I had a huge role. This is the starting lineup versus Wales.
Right.
Pulisic, Sargent, Weah. First half, great. Second half, there's a case to be made that a player like Gio would have provided a lot if healthy. But I cannot fault a coach for not playing a player, not giving time to a player who betrayed the trust of his teammates. And this is where we're at. And we don't know the exact timeline, so it's very difficult. But if you're trying to tell me that Gio Reyna acted this way and his teammates called him out for it, and then he's going to be rewarded with a start?
Right.
I'm not buying it.
Yeah, for me, the timeline is a little bit more clear in that there must have been, he comes into camp, performs however he performs, and at some point is told, hey, you're not going to have a huge role here. Then that performance drops off. That's how I read the article.
Right.
So to me, if we go off, I know you say high ceiling all the time with Gio Reyna, and I don't doubt you. I'll you're the footballing expert here. So
remember that.
Steady. So, but if anybody, if we're going off like form coming in, because of course Gio's last year has just been ruined by injuries, right?
Yeah.
But if there's anybody who had a case to mope, feel bad about not being in that Wales 11 that we saw, to me it was never Gio Reyna, it was Brendan Aaronson.
Right.
That was always the case for me.
Week in, week out.
Now, if I look at the strengths of this team and I consider that Aaronson could have been a great fit for you at one of those other way up Pulisic, you know, that argument, I actually think where Reyna could have really had a huge role in this tournament, especially thinking about what Greg Berhalter said pre-tournament, I'm going to use a lot of my subs, and then seeing
which
what
he didn't.
He didn't. And especially, like, where did he not use the subs almost at all is that midfield three. And clearly by the fourth game, that group has run out of gas. Was there a start? Was there a full 45 minutes instead of the 7 that he got against England to give Gio, maybe it was Wales, maybe it was England, maybe it was somewhere else, that could have left Yunus Musa, Weston McKennie. I don't think he's a Tyler Adams sub, but one of those two guys fresher.
Absolutely.
For the game against Netherlands. That to me is the real loss here.
Now
with
the
Gio.
Timeline here is where we're not clear, correct? Because we don't know at what point the apology was deemed or was given and it was deemed enough.
Well, it sounds like after the Wales game, things were. After that, there were no more problems after the apology.
After the Wales game, there are no more problems. Giovanni Reyna has to play a lot more. If he's forgiven by his teammates, by the coaching staff, and it's all put aside like we've heard it was put aside, he has to get more playing time because of that ceiling, because of the fresh legs, because you know the talent level is there to help you win. Now, not winning against Wales puts you behind the eight ball. You win against Wales, you're afforded more leeway for substitutions,
yep,
to revamp or to rotate, to do certain things. You take certain liberties that you normally wouldn't take,
right,
if you're behind the eight ball. They tied, very unfortunately. And that put them behind that eight ball. And that's when the hand in Berhalter's mind is forced.
Right. I also think at the Wales game, no matter what, is closest to the Algarafa scrimmage, which seems to be the inflection point, right?
Right.
So I could see the manager having trouble trusting the player in that Wales game, even if this had been cleared up pre-Wales, having just seen that effort. Even if you think it's cleared up, you might say, I need more time before I can trust this player and put him back out there. And maybe it wasn't just the manager that felt that. You're talking about the other players who felt that. And the manager clearly can't put a guy that the other, if he doesn't trust him, and the other guys don't trust
him. Listen, we've been hearing about scuffles that happen on the field and players calling each other out. These things happen all the time.
Yeah.
Okay? What doesn't happen all the time is a team or a coach ready to send a player home from a major tournament.
Speaks to the severity of the behavior.
That's what it is. Now, if
that's
it was,
more on Gio than anybody else.
And clearly Gio accepts that.
Right, he owns it.
Gio is 20 years old, and in his statement, and listen, they have agents, you have a camp, you have a marketing team. It was very well put out. His acceptance in his role for not playing, for letting his teammates down. Gio Reyna, post that disciplinary issue, and everything we've heard has been fine.
Yeah.
And his response to a betrayal has been fine.
Okay, let's get to the response. Greg Berhalter, has he broken the code of the locker room here? What's your reaction to this story spilling out in this manner?
Why? What type of Muppet does this? Think about this.
Ah, that's strong.
No, it's not. Your one job is the collective. Your one job is to treat that locker room like a sanctuary. Giovanni Reyna's statement. Mm-hmm. Greg Berhalter's own words of keeping things in-house. Betrayed right there. I've not been to many symposiums. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine you would tell a mass number of people to keep this between us. What do you get out of that? By singling out a player, not naming him, knowing, because we said this, somebody will talk, it will get out. And then having it get out this way and then saying, oh, my bad, I thought that was off the record.
Right.
I said off the record.
So he was asked
about... It's a betrayal, Sebi. He betrayed that locker room. And if I'm another player in that locker room, how could I ever trust him again?
So he was asked about, like, handling difficult decisions around performance. That's the question. He literally could have picked any other example to give. He clearly chose this one. Do you think that he wanted it to get out, or do you think there's a... Because you always say, if there's anybody that's green here with this team, it's Greg Berhalter. Is this him being naive or clever? Right? Has he intentionally put this out in this manner, or is he naive
That's
to have thought?
That's diabolical. If you think he intentionally put it out in this manner.
Well, I don't believe that Greg Berhalter is so naive to think that speaking to a room, even if the rules are off the record, that this would not get out. Because literally, if he didn't want this to get out, he could have chosen any other example. He could have chosen something from Columbus Crew days, right? He chose this example to a room full of people. How about this? He may not wanted it to have gotten out, but I don't think he minds that it got out, because if he really wanted to keep it a secret, this is not the story that he would have told in this symposium. That's hard for me to believe.
You don't think he minds that it got out? This undermines the message that he's been peddling the whole cycle.
So he's just naive enough to think that a room full
of... That's one word. That's one word you could use, Sebi. I mean, Seb, he's not a good leader. That's a reality here.
They've built a great chemistry, they built a great culture, all of this, all the recruits that have come in, he's not a good leader.
And he doesn't like confrontation. Because there was
He's come on this show twice.
There was confrontation from John Brooks. There was confrontation from Matt Miazga. There's been confrontation in the past, certain altercations, players, and they're no longer there. So that's one way. And then you're going to put up a leadership council. We saw the rotation of the armband throughout the cycle, which to me was ridiculous.
So he should be more of kind of a dictator in that locker room. He takes
it's
the decision, he owns the decision.
No. A leadership council. Okay. That's saying there are certain problems. And listen. That's what a captain's for, right? But saying these problems are your problems to players is not correct. There are certain things that players shouldn't be policing themselves on, because it becomes a Lord of the Flies environment, and that is not healthy. That is not cohesive to a locker room type ambiance. That's where he is wrong. If there was a vote with the leadership council, or even his own coaching staff, at the end of the day, it's his job. There are a lot of good things he did in dealing with this, okay? Trying to protect the player. I really do think he was trying to protect the player, and
right.
That's a good thing.
Right. Because the nuclear option is send him home.
This is a boneheaded move. And trust me, I'm sure it wasn't easy for him having this type of rift with Giovanni Reyna. Claudio Reyna and Claudio Reyna's wife are very close
right.
to Greg Berhalter. I'm sure this is very difficult for him, which makes everything even worse. It makes it worse. And now, you may be trying to re-sign with U.S. Soccer. You may be trying to dip your toe in the European pool.
To that point, I'm interested in what you said, that this effectively loses the locker room for him. I think you said, you know, if you're a player in there now, how do you trust him moving forward? As I put all this together, and I don't believe Berhalter to be so naive. I do think he's somewhat calculated. This feels like a guy then on his way out. I don't. If he was coming back or wanted
to
come back.
Why the strays? There are ways to go out.
Do you not read into this that way? That this is a guy on the way out?
You're going to let a 20-year-old catch strays like that?
I'm not saying it's the right way to go out. I'm just saying,
wow.
You don't do this if you're coming back, if you have a mind on coming back.
Fair. Fine. Okay? But if I'm the next team, if I'm the next potential landing spot, this is a tournament setting. This is a team that gets together once every, 3 months? And you've had these issues? How will it be in the day-to-day? Yeah. Wouldn't that make me second-guess things? Now, Greg Berhalter, honestly, I think he's a good guy. I think he's done a lot of good with the program. His management of certain players, certain roles, has left a lot to be desired. We've seen reports of players in that locker room, per The Athletic, who think there may be a problem in terms of respect.
Okay, we'll get to that in just a second. I've had a lot of questions for you. You put out a tweet a couple hours ago. People are pouring in with questions about this specific situation. So usually we save Check the Mentions for kind of the end of the show. Why don't we do Check the Mentions now and see what the people want to know specifically about this situation. We'll start here. Carlos asks, does the Gio incident turn into a Carlos Vela? Okay. Style incident in regard to future men's national team calls. For those who don't know, there was an incident with Carlos Vela and the Mexican national team that kind of spilled over to the Federation. It ends up with Vela missing the 2014 World Cup, and I don't know, maybe it plays a role in his decision not to come back after the 2018 World Cup. What do you think? Any chance we go down that road here?
Wow, it would be...
No way. Insanely, you saw Gio's statement. He loves playing for his team.
It would be insanely unfortunate if that is the case, because we saw how it went down with Carlos Vela. The most talented player of his generation didn't want to play a World Cup because he had been spurned. He had been scapegoated by the Mexican press because of the Federation.
Federation.
Well,
really.
Lighter fluid on
the gas on the fire.
Yeah, thank you. It's the press. So that would be very unfortunate, but I don't believe so.
I don't think they're the same person at all. Carlos Vela said he likes basketball more than soccer.
Forget about that for a second. Claudio Reyna, his mother, two individuals that are very important.
Represented the national team.
The national team. I don't think, because of that support system, that would happen.
Right.
But he's 20 years old. He made a mistake, and I think he's paying too dearly for this.
Yeah, that would be terrible if Gio Reyna goes down the Carlos Vela path, certainly for fans of the U.S. men's national team. Let's get to our next tweet here on Check the Mentions. Stan the Man, or USSF Burner. I love it. How does this kerfuffle affect Greg's perception among club teams? Eric, you were kind of talking about that before.
What's a kerfuffle?
Kerfuffle. It's like a... scrap.
All right.
Mix up.
Okay. Rose.
Si.
All right. Yeah. I do think Greg Berhalter is going to have club offers.
Yeah.
I think here within the World Cup, neutrals, outsiders especially, saw a group they liked that was well worked. Every time we spoke to somebody, they talked about how bien trabajado they were. So it was well coached is what they're saying. Yeah. That's something that for Greg Berhalter is going to be a feather in his cap. And moving forward, he's going to have opportunities. But if you could see, and if somebody dissects how kind of things have gone through his hands and he's kind of let things get bigger than they should have in some way, shape, or form, this could be something where you have to keep an eye on if you're a club.
Yeah. It's tough because I feel like, as you mentioned, the initial handling of the problem is solid, which is a club team, that's what you want to see. It's the handling of the communication after that. And it's what you often talk about, which is what you say to the press. And that's where Berhalter gets in trouble.
And Seb, this is a leadership symposium, right? you could have used a million examples from your time in North Carolina, from your time in Sweden, from your time playing in the Bundesliga, from your time in the national team as a player, to whatever. Used the one hot button topic
that's
on the tip of everybody's tongue.
Yeah, that's why I think it was intentional.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, let's move on with, surprise, surprise, Herc, more on Greg Berhalter and more reporting from The Athletic, again from Paul Tenorio and Sam Stashkel. And their article, which was actually, I think this is 2 days old now, states that one source close to multiple players said Berhalter would, quote, face a major challenge in continuing to command respect from a group that is mostly playing in Europe, end quote. Herc? Is this something, nothing, or everything as it pertains to Greg Berhalter's potential future with the U.S. men's national team?
I think it's everything. You need to have the group buy into the message. And if the majority of the group is already, I shouldn't say majority. If
it's one source close to multiple players. You know what that sounds like to me? Agent.
Okay. Great. Could be. Do you think there's some truth to it?
Sure, but there's also an agenda to it if it comes from an agent, which I don't know, but one source close to multiple players.
But you don't know it's an agent.
Who do you think it is? It's one source close to multiple players.
Who was the report from?
Paul and Sam, same guys.
Paul and Sam. I don't think they just put it out if it's just some random agent. And I'm not saying there's just random agents. But what I will say here is not only do I trust the reporting, there's a logic to it.
Right. Just when you say majority, I think it's worth noting it's one source.
And I corrected myself, not majority. But there's a logic to it, right? I've always told you this is a very young group. This is a very green group. What follows that when I say it?
The manager.
Who's the greenest? Yep. The manager. And you saw versus the Netherlands, they didn't lose because the Netherlands were better athletes or were in better moment or even better players, because maybe some of that's debatable, like Greg Berhalter's comments about Memphis Depay, right?
Right.
You were outcoached. So there is some sentiment. There's some truth to that sentiment there, where if there was a better coach, you can get more out of these players who are already brushing shoulders with some of the world's elite, who are already in some of the best tactical schemes and setups.
I don't think they're looking at it as like, oh, we got outcoached against Netherlands. If it's the players based in Europe, a lot of them are being exposed to elite coaching there. If you're at a Chelsea, if you're at a Juventus,
what'd I say?
Barcelona, Milan, it's really that you're getting the best of the best there.
What'd I say? I mean,
you said Rossi. I thought you were talking about players and who they're playing with. You didn't specify.
No, just in general. But that's what I'm trying to tell you. So you're being exposed to something different, and then you come to the national team, and you're saying, you know what? I just think it's a logical question if this manager has the chops to deal with players that are already at a world level competing.
Also from the article, they say another source claims that some players felt Berhalter's messaging was inconsistent as far as who he decided to call up and not call up.
Really? Yeah. You mean like playing a high line and Tim Ream doesn't fit that high line, but you call in Tim Ream and then you don't play a high line? And listen, Tim Ream was great. He was great.
Was that
an excuse for John Brooks.
Do players evaluate all managers like that? Like, even though you didn't play in Europe, when you were with the national team, were you like, oh, what's this guy coming in? What's that guy coming in? Is that a usual thing for players to do?
No, you don't question who comes in. That's that, but you do question the message of why they come in.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
So if Greg Berhalter is sitting here saying his defenders need to be athletic, his defenders need to do something, need to play a certain way in a high line, and that is the reason why John Brooks didn't play, okay, well, that goes across the board. And I think those are the inconsistencies there. This isn't the first time that players have expressed their frustrations with the message. You saw Christian Pulisic after the Canada game in Nashville express his frustration with the message or the overall tactical plan against Canada. Okay? There have been moments
criticizing
where that
tactics is different than looking at who he's calling
you
in.
You criticize tactics publicly. You're criticizing the coach. That's just a reality.
All right, so we've hammered this enough. Let's have some fun.
This wasn't fun?
Well, not for everybody. Let's go down the hypothetical route.
Oh, God.
Let's say Greg Berhalter is going to get a job coaching in Europe. The U.S. men's national team is going to need a new head coach ahead of 2026. So in this thought exercise, we're going to approach it kind of like the college admissions process. And I don't remember much
about
it.
Explain this to me.
Because it was a long time ago. Yeah. But here's basically how it works when you think about your schools, right? You've got your safety schools.
All right.
Where you're pretty sure you can get in. You've got your possible schools where you think you got a pretty good shot, but maybe you don't get in. And then you got your reach schools, your Ivy Leaguers. Your dream schools,
all right?
Right?
All right.
So let's use those filters, those categories, to pick national team managers. Let's start, Herc, with your reach manager for the U.S. men's national team for 2026.
Oh, if I had a dream, we can dream. Give me Zinedine Zidane.
What? Okay.
If that's the dream, I want a player who was a player who was well-revered and well-respected, but as a manager, equally as successful. And get this, what I love about him is you look at his Madrid teams, what did they do the best?
They won in tournaments.
They won!
In tournaments.
They won!
Yes, yes.
And you could say ADN Madrid, you could say that's just part of the DNA, but he has that DNA in him. He gets the best out of players. He's the guy. Zinedine Zidane is the guy that convinced Cristiano Ronaldo not to be a winger anymore. You are a nine. You are a central figure. All I want you to do is score goals. He's the guy who gets players to buy in. That's my reach. If I could really reach for anybody, I mean, the resume speaks for himself, for itself, but imagine these players playing under a coach like Zinedine Zidane, just how invested they would be in that message.
Right, exactly. You talk about kind of respect from the European guys. You couldn't have, like, more respect than Zinedine Zidane. I wonder if the lack of international experience bugs you a little bit. But for my reach manager, I'm also going with a guy that doesn't have, per se, international managerial
experience. Who you got?
All right. I'm going, Herc, with Jurgen Klopp. Now, The Athletic has reported that U.S. soccer has expressed interest in Pep Guardiola. But I actually think Pep Guardiola wouldn't be a great fit for this player.
You got those players, right?
I mean, you can't go out and just buy midfielders who are going to ping it around.
De Bruyne doesn't, no, he's not from the States.
Maybe he has an uncle or something. Or a younger cousin.
An uncle? Like, who do you want to
get? I don't know, anything. A grandfather, whatever it takes. For me, I like Klopp. One, because I think he would I love the counter-pressing style, right? If we think about what this
the
team
heavy
does.
Heavy metal style.
And what this team does best. Those three guys in the middle there, that MMA midfield, just as soon as the ball's turned over, locking in and going at it. I also think there's some tactical flexibility there. He plays kind of a famous 4-3-3 now at Liverpool. It wasn't that way so much at Dortmund. It was a different setup, more like a 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1. So even though he has a style, he doesn't have a locked-in formation. So for me, that's why I'm going with Jurgen Klopp. The only problem, he might cost you like $20 million a year because he's on $19 million a year
right now. Organize that Copa America. Get
Liverpool.
That surplus.
Give me your possible choice as men's national team manager.
Oh, people are going to hate me for this one.
Oh, they already do.
Oh, my goodness. Jose Mourinho, come on down.
No.
Now, listen, my only gripe here, he is possible, by the way. My man's coaching Conference League, so don't tell me he's not possible.
I was just about to say.
And he mentioned the U.S. men's national team and that pool and how exciting it was, this young team. Here's my only wrinkle, as the producer would say, is it's not very good with the youth.
How do you think he handles the Gio situation?
Yeah, that would be a little wrinkle there. But the style, listen, you don't have the players right now. You don't have the pool. I know everybody would love to see an attacking, proactive style. There are certain things that he, I think, could really, really maximize. And he would be a lot of fun to cover.
That's what I'm going to agree with you right there. The media fireworks would just be off the chain if we got Jose Mourinho. I think they would also be off the chain if the guy that I'm going to give you is my possible pick.
Okay, who's your possible pick here?
Loco.
Abreu?
No. Marcelo Bielsa.
Oh, you is crazy.
Why do I like this one? One, he's available. So a little bit more possible, I think, than Jose Mourinho. Two, I go back to, of course, he's had the national team job with Argentina and Chile. Right. Argentina, actually, it went well in the qualifying, did not go well famously in the 2002 World Cup. With Chile, he does two things that I think are important. One, he brought in a generation of young players, right? So we know he knows how to work with young guys. And two, he took Chile, which was a team that had failed to qualify for back-to-back World Cups, not only got them qualified and into the round of 16 in 2010, but did so with a much more attacking style. Right. I think that's a fit there. The other thing I like about Bielsa, and I think it's kind of been lost after his run at Leeds and some of the very exciting games, but also catastrophic results that they had. He's a pretty good tournament coach. With Athletic Club de Bilbao, he got to a couple finals, a Copa del Rey, a Europa League. They didn't win, but they got to the finals of those tournaments.
Yeah, there is a point where that message fizzles out and guys get physically just drained. I will say this.
Is that international level, though? Isn't it different? You're not doing it every single day.
And I will say this. There's a reason they call him El Loco.
Yes.
One. Mm-hmm. And two, if you wanted to go that route, you could go a lot cheaper with Matias Almeida.
Oh, okay. It's a good shout.
It's exactly the same type of coaching style, and it'd be a lot cheaper. But yes, I understand what
you're going. Someone very familiar with the region as well, more so certainly than Bielsa. Okay. Let's get to what was very familiar from my college application process, the safety schools. Who is your
D3 in the house?
Who is your safety manager for the U.S. men's national team, Hercules?
Let's go, Jesse Marsh. Your time has come. Full throttle, high press. Get your guys geared up and ready. You know these players already. You know the setup. You pretty much Piojo Herrera your way into every interview when it comes talking about the U.S.
No,
men's national
team. No, he's not like Piojo Herrera.
Oh, he's a Piojo. Herrera when it comes to talking about the U.S. men's national team. I'm not saying I want the job, but let me tell you why it's a great job. That is,
He's supposed to say that.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
And Jesse Marsh would be an ideal fit. Respected, European pedigree, knows the pool. There is no player in this pool who he doesn't know. That's a reality.
Right.
The strengths, the weaknesses, knows how physically capable they can be. Plays a style where if everybody's bought in, it's very exciting to watch. It's very chaotic at times, but it's very effective as well. And I know you could say, well, look at the leads and whatnot. Okay, that is one thing. When we're talking about a tournament setting, I do think that style could be very effective. And he's very possible. He's a guy who just makes it obvious he's interested in that job and that role at some point in time. And I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, as we look at the moves, like, is Premier League job, really good job, to U.S. men's national team, is that a lateral move or even a downward move? Because for the guy that I'm picking as my safety choice.
You think representing your country is a downward move?
No, not for a guy who wants to do it, but the Premier League job is not something that a lot of American managers attain. And so I think if he's got that, it's going to be tough to leave that, I think, is my point. Yeah. Obviously, you can go to the national
team. Things change in 3 years too, right?
Totally, especially at Leeds, right? We know that could go down. So for me, I'm going with somebody who it would definitely be a step up to go to the national team.
Okay.
The guy I'm picking is coming from Major League Soccer. One, Jim Curtin of the Philadelphia Union. One.
Oh.
We know he's good with young players. Specifically,
you just want controversy.
We know that he's good with American young players, okay? He's a defense-first guy, right, which I kind of like. I think that's a good identity to have for tournament soccer. We've seen him do well in tournaments, not always win them, but get to finals of the Open Cup this past year, get to the final of MLS Cup.
Awesome.
We also know.
Let's bring him to the national team.
We also know that he maximizes what he's got, which
he
I think is a critical point for a national team manager. 27th, next to last in spending in MLS.
Awesome.
And he's got them top of the Eastern Conference competing for MLS Cup.
This is unfair, and I hate you in production because you know that I like me some Jim Curtin. But if you're trying to say that one of the reasons he should coach the national team is because in a salary cap he's done well.
I'm saying that you have a limited, like in a national team, you can't go out and buy players. There is a limit. It's not a salary cap. There's a cap on your player pool, and you got to make the most of it. And you got to be flexible, and I think that's the other
thing. You want to win, right?
He has shown that he's flexible.
You want to win, right?
Yes, of
course. Has he shown that he's a winner?
You can't say that he's not a winner when he's 27th out of 28 in spending and getting him to MLS Cup. Come on.
What has he won?
That's harsh.
No.
What did the last manager win?
No. What, who?
Berhalter.
And you want to go down that route again?
I think it's
you
different.
Just proved red point. I love me some Jimmy Curtin.
Curtin has done much more in MLS than Berhalter.
I love me some Jimmy Curtin, and it hurts that you're having me question him. I love me some Jimmy Curtin. But this is a national team. It's not like, hey, look what he did with
this club team that he didn't win with. It's a national team.
We'll see. We'll see. Greg Berhalter, noted Philadelphia Union and Jim Curtin hater.
I love you, Jim Curtin. Now one hurt.
America.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, time to continue our preview for Tuesday's semifinal, Argentina-Croatia. We welcome back to Football Americas, Morena Beltran. More, great to have you back with
Hi,
us.
Hi,
thank you. We didn't scare you off after the first time.
No, huh? No, you didn't. I think I'm starting a new friendship with this.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yes.
Yeah.
The tactical
and
board
I think
is perfect.
The board. And I think it could be our superstition. I hope we...
Oh, it's going to be your good luck charm.
That's right.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope we don't have to suffer again.
That's right.
Because the last minutes of the first time it was.
Yes. So. We did have you on only once, and Argentina advanced. So as far as superstitions go, we're perfect
okay.
So far.
I hope so.
Let's react to what we just heard there from Scaloni. It seems like everybody around the world is kind of saying the Argentina team has bad behavior. What's been the reaction from ESPN Argentina and some of your colleagues over there?
I laugh about it because I don't know. I don't know what people expect about like this kind of matches, right? For me, it's something like it's normal. It's I don't know. Maybe there's people, there's media, there's press that watch football every 4 years. Like maybe don't leave the football every weekend. So maybe they don't understand how a match can end like this. I think it's totally normal. I didn't offend or get angry because. Four players of Netherlands were like Lautaro going to kick his penalty, and they were like going to say some things. It's football. I think it's normal, and for me it was spectacular that our leaders like Messi and other players show that reaction. For me, it's completely normal.
Okay, you say it's normal. One thing that wasn't normal was Messi's behavior. And let me tell you why. Yes, because normally, and even in Argentina, some would go as far to say that he's lukewarm, that he's a pecho frío. But we're seeing a different kind of Messi this day in this World Cup.
More Maradona.
Uh-huh. Why are we seeing this?
I like that comparison.
I think Messi always been like that, but maybe he has, when he started with Argentina, with the national team, maybe he was a little bit
introvert.
Younger. Yeah, and there were other players like Mascherano, like and other leaders that at that time, but I think Messi always been this player like answer on the pitch. And now since Copa America of 2019.
Seven. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, yes. the one before we win it, he speaks about how do you say it, el árbitro?
The referee.
The referee and other stuff that maybe he was more reserved because he has another players that make that things. And now he is that player, and I think maybe in his consideration is his last World Cup. Mm-hmm. And I think he's doing everything he can to take that path.
Speaking of the referees, there were 17 yellow cards. No. My count serves correct.
I think it's the second match that has the most.
It was historic. Yeah. Historic. As a result of that, Argentina will be without a few key pieces, Acuña and Montiel. Now, Acuña is a starter.
Yeah.
So how does that impact what you think will be the 11 tomorrow, not just in terms of his position, but if it impacts like any other changes or formation?
Yeah. This is Argentina?
Yes.
Perfect.
I think we set it up right, but change it as you want.
Yeah. We're not going to play, I think, with five defenders
okay.
again. So I think it's going to be like, maybe we can use this one. I think it's going to be like our traditional system, maybe with Leo over here. I think the doubt is if Di Maria plays, he's a starter or no. Maybe he's not 100%, but it's a semifinal, so you have to take the risks. But it's going to be Tagliafico instead of Acuña. I think Lisandro Martinez, that is a great player, will be at the bank again. So we would be Molina, Cuti Romero, Otamendi, and Tagliafico, Enzo Fernandez. But maybe if Di Maria is not viable to be a starter, I think maybe he could play with Paredes. So they will make a 4-4-2 with Messi playing whatever he wants. But that's the doubt. Maybe or he adds another midfielder or he adds Di Maria from
Quick,
the start.
One question on Acuña Tagliafico. Yeah. How does that change what Argentina can do, or are they the same player?
Is it different? Right.
No, I think Marcos is like more instinct player. He makes everything with his strength because he's so physical and like he's maybe more a chaotic player, it's good. Yeah. But I think Argentina has that kind of players like De Paul. You have some debilities or, but you have a lot of strengths with that. So I think Tagliafico it's a player with like more tactical
awareness.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, like more. He's really intelligent. He has good pass, but it's more. It's how do you say prolijo?
Prolijo.
Yeah, like
pragmatic or.
Yeah, no, como de lo contrario desordenado.
Oh, he's very organized. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's very organized.
Structured.
Yeah.
Yes. The opposite structured. Of chaos, as we would say. Yeah.
Mori, let me ask you a question. I spent all week trashing Molina and Acuña.
Oh, yes. Really?
And how'd that work
being,
out for you?
Yes, they ended up being no. key factors in the game
oh
against
my
the
God.
Netherlands. Why were they so important against the Netherlands?
Oh,
or how were they so important?
Yeah, I think Argentina always have like the Molina, Acuña, Tagliafico, Montiel. They were more like a pocho, how do you say it?
Supporting roles.
Yeah.
Yes.
Supporting roles. They wouldn't impact so much in the structure of the team. Like Argentina always have his like su fuerte.
Yeah, their strength.
Their strength. Yeah, in the middle. So maybe they use it more to take the ball like this, and then create the spaces. Inside, right? They didn't finish.
Yeah, they didn't.
They
finish
finished.
Place.
They didn't finish a lot. But in this match, we play with another defender. Yeah, center back. So they have the possibility to go very, very high. Molina made a lot of movements like inside. He was playing like a second strike for some time. So it was really good. You see, like at the goal, Messi has the he made like this moment with
the
this moment
run
with
inside.
The ball, and then he goes like this, and Messi put the
Messi does what he does.
Yeah, he's got
so. Right after the game against Netherlands, when you came back, you were obviously very excited. The first thing you said to me was Di Maria, his impact.
Yeah.
But he only played 8 minutes, right? He comes on in minute 112. So
incredible.
If we think that in that game they go three at the back, that allows the wing backs to get forward. If they're only going to play two at the back now in terms of your central defense, then probably the wing backs, the outside backs, are not going to go up as much. So how important then is Di Maria's role, whether he starts or even if he comes off the bench?
You see, Di Maria for me, like it's our second best player after Messi, and he has like something we say in Argentina that is potrero,
like a street
spirit, and he creates movements and jugadas, plays that don't exist. He has that ability, and he has, of course, his left-footed that it's full of talent. But I think Di Maria would start, of course, on the right. Maybe.
Do you think he starts?
I don't know. I don't really know. I think Di Maria has something very special. It's that he doesn't need adaptation. He can enter like at the second time or like 50 minutes
and
later.
He gets involved very quickly.
Yeah, and he impacts right away on the matches. You saw the other day, I think if Scaloni would have the possibility to not risk him, he wouldn't. Yeah, he wouldn't put him on the pitch because you saw him. He was like he's so electrical, and he didn't have that. But he had like other things, like go inside, making some passes here, and trying things that Argentina wouldn't at that time. And he really impacted on the match. But I think on the play. But I think if he starts, he will do it on the right, of course. I think maybe Tagliafico would be the left defender.
Left back, yes.
That could be like more involved in the initial phase.
Build up, yes.
In the build up, perfect. And maybe Molina, yes, would go with Angel because
Molina and Di Maria. I can see that being dangerous, no?
Yeah, I think so. I think Argentina, of course, will have Enzo here, De Paul, Alexis McAllister, Messi, and Julian. I think maybe Julian would be that player that will move over here because Argentina won't have a player to go on the left side.
More, when we talk about Croatia and how defensively structured they are. I mean, the lines are so so compact and make it very difficult for what you say is the strength of Argentina. Yeah. How can Argentina hurt them?
Oh, I think Argentina, if Paredes plays, would be a good news because I think Argentina maybe can have more players inside and has, at that point, maybe would have, the one like the Paredes here between the
center backs.
Yeah, between the center backs, and Enzo could play like with more freedom, and just have the
wing backs here.
Yeah, the wing backs really high, like Molina and Tagliafico. I think if Paredes plays, would be a good news. I think Argentina, if moves move fast the ball, will can break this because here I think it's one-to-one.
Right.
Too much one-to-one. We have to be very careful with this player, Juranovic.
Yes, he likes to attack.
Yeah, and he's like a train, we say in Argentina. Yeah, he has really abilities or qualities with his physique. So I think we have to be really
mindful.
Careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. With him, but I think it's Argentina will have these spaces if moves the ball like to here and here, and Paredes has the ability to take these risks because he's so technical and he can make really good pass. I think we can make that, and then we have players like Messi that if you give the ball and he has someone pressing him, he will go out anyways.
Right. So we've talked a lot about kind of Argentina attacking. I want to consider now maybe Argentina more in a defensive space and what the strategy might be there. Because I think when we talk about Croatia, we're very much focused on, let me get that right, on Luka Modric.
Yeah.
No? So where's this guy?
Yeah.
Four. Yeah, kind of four right there.
Four.
So Modric is probably this player here, right? If we think of them in a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
Brozovic here, Modric, maybe that guy kind of coming in on the left side.
Yeah.
How does Argentina stop Modric? Or not stop him, but limit his impact?
Yeah.
Because that's obviously the key player for
Croatia. I think Argentina has the same intention with Netherlands, like to try to Frankie de Jong doesn't impact on the game, and he always has or De Paul or Alexis. It depends on where he moves because Luka it's a free player, like he moves whatever he wants.
Right.
Yeah, he has that responsibility. So I think Argentina will try to make pairs. You say
yes.
To make pairs with
to
their,
match up with them.
Yeah, with their midfielders. So I think that could work, but maybe you have to limit always the receptors, right? You say it like that?
Who's receiving the ball?
Yeah. Who's receiving?
Who supplies Luka Modric?
I think if Luka plays the farthest as we can of our pitch, would be the best. I think Argentina has to be really careful because they like really direct on their attacks. I don't think they have, of course, Kovacic and Brozovic and Luka, but they don't move so much the ball. Maybe, yes, they are intelligent and try to the rhythm of the match, put it down. But when they can attack, they go like with Juranovic, I think.
Yes.
I don't remember. And they put the ball
in the box. Yeah. Yes, they're very dangerous.
Yeah, with so much people. So I think Argentina has to try. They don't do that, no?
Very quickly, I'm curious because I've been very surprised with the physical aspect of Croatia's game, how much they have in the tank. If I had to guess which team was going to come in physically in better shape, if you had to guess which team is physically in better shape, which one would you say, Argentina or Croatia?
Oh.
If it's a physical game.
Yeah, I think...
They're both pretty beat up, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think Croatia has, like, the two alargues. How do you say? The tiempo suplementario.
Extra
times. They win the extra time
twice. Times, yeah. They have it that in their backs, but I think they demonstrated that they are a really... ¿Cómo se dice? How do you say it when... Resiliente. When
Resilience?
You have the strength,
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
The strength too, because they were like 0-1 in both matches. Mm-hmm. They
right.
have to go to, and tie the match and then go to the. I think they, it's like their spirit, right?
Their way
of living. It's like I think it's also has
yeah,
to
they
do with,
themselves
their,
as
with,
warriors.
Their, with their yeah. history. Yeah.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
So I think Croatia has the experience, but Argentina demonstrated that they had a soul. They have soul that and mind that could be really really useful for those times.
All right, Morena Beltran, great to have you with us here on Football Americas. Really appreciate the perspective, and hopefully the good luck that this show has brought Argentina
do not ever post
and we'll
that.
We'll have you back on before the final.
I hope you are our Kabbalah.
There it is.
As we say
so
in
well.
Argentina.
Thanks for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
All right, what are the computers and odds makers saying ahead of tomorrow's semifinal? Looks pretty clear. Both think that Argentina are the favorite to make it to the World Cup final. All right, let's talk about the ball that will be used, right? Because the semifinal, as we mentioned at the top of the show, will be played with a different ball than the rest of the tournament. We go from
Good
Avrila.
Work, is that you right there?
No chance. I can do any of that. I'm more of a runner than a technical player. We're going to Al Hilm. All right, so who do you think will end up in the final? Croatia or Argentina?
My gut tells me Argentina.
Ooh.
My head tells me how could I pick against Croatia.
All right. But you're saying extra time or you're saying penalties?
I say extra time.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, so Argentina through to the final in extra time.
I think what we are seeing from Messi right now is what every Argentino and everybody around the world who's ever questioned Messi has
yep.
wanted to see from Messi.
That fire.
The fire, the blood. The willingness to take the team on your shoulders and say, this is my moment, my last moment, this is my last dance.
All right, we shall see on tomorrow's edition of Football Americas. We will be not just recapping Argentina-Croatia, but also looking ahead to France against Morocco. We'll be efforting a preview segment with our good friend Julien Laurent. But if Jules can't make it, we'll still be looking ahead. For Herc, producer Beto, and our production crew from LA to Bristol, and the good folks who put our Football Americas logo on the
that
water here in Doha. That's
I put out
impressive.
A drone.
We'll see you tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time, here on ESPN+.